Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
With his opponents sidelined, Vladimir Putin wins another 6 years in office. Plus, federal prosecutors investigate Meta for potentially profiting from drug sales. And China tries to lure back foreigners, but is its charm offensive enough?
There's a lot more at stake here beyond just being liked. Foreign investment inflows last year fell 8%, and that's the first decline in 10 years. So Beijing really needs to address this slide.
It's Monday, March 18th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin in Russia, where, as predicted, Vladimir Putin has claimed victory in the country's general election, securing another six-year term in office with 88% of the vote. The inevitable result came after a carefully managed re-election campaign that saw opposition candidates sidelined. Putin's most effective opponent, Alexei Navalny, was also out of the picture, having been found dead in an Arctic prison camp last month in circumstances that haven't been fully explained. Political analysts say that Putin's fifth term in office is likely to be taken up by the war in Ukraine and ensuring the continued support from the Russian people. Meanwhile, Ukraine is beginning to report success in exporting grain following a halt in maritime shipments after Russia's 2022 invasion. And though the UN and Turkey subsequently brokered a Black Sea grain deal, Ukraine said that Russia was using inspections to slow down shipments. Our James Marson in Kyiv says that makes a recent increase in exports a bright spot as the country contends with stalled U.S. aid and recent setbacks on the battlefield.
Something changed last summer. Ukraine actually managed to blast a path of its own using unconventional sea power. So they used naval drones to attack Russia's Black Sea fleet. The Ukrainians sunk several warships and forced the Russian fleet out of large parts of the Black Sea. That created what the Ukrainians are calling a new corridor that's allowed ships to start taking out grain again. And that's brought export levels almost back to where they were before the war. That's a huge boost for Ukraine's economy. The economy ministry estimates it will add about $3.3 billion to exports this year and 1.2 percentage points to economic growth.
And while the situation in the Black Sea could change, James said that officials are hopeful that they've put the grain industry on a sustainable path.
A key part of getting the grain corridor working has been insurance. The Ukrainian government worked with international insurers to help grain ships sailing to and from Ukraine to find affordable coverage. At first, the ships that were coming were smaller ships, but as confidence has grown, the ships have grown in size. This has been a big military success for Ukraine that has had important economic consequences. Andrei Stavnitsa, whose company operates one of Odessa's ports, called it a showcase of power that's communicated with Russia in a language that it understands.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is hitting back at Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer after the highest-ranking Jewish lawmaker in the U.S. called for new elections and said Israel, quote, cannot hope to succeed as a pariah opposed by the rest of the world. In an interview on Fox and Friends, Netanyahu called Schumer's remarks wholly inappropriate and condemned what he depicted as an effort to replace him during a time of war. He also defended plans for a possible invasion of the southern Gaza city of Rafah, citing the risk that Hamas fighters left there could regroup.
That's not going to happen. So we need total victory over Hamas. We're within reach. We should do it. We're going to do it while we enable the civilian population in Rafah to leave, as we've done up to now. But we have to finish the job.
In separate remarks on Fox News, White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby reiterated U.S. concerns about a potential Rafah invasion, saying Israeli plans to provide a civilian escape route out of the city so far haven't been credible. Cuba witnessed its largest anti-regime demonstrations since 2021 yesterday, as hundreds of protesters took to the streets in two cities driven by anger over blackouts and a lack of food. Cuba's state-run telecom company responded by curtailing mobile internet service on parts of the island, complicating efforts to get news of the demonstrations out to the rest of the country. The U.S. Embassy in Havana urged the government to address the legitimate needs of the Cuban people, while Cuba's president said the protests were the result of the U.S. embargo. And in a blow to the Biden administration's counterterrorism efforts in West Africa, we are exclusively reporting that Niger has cut military ties with the U.S. after Washington accused it of secretly exploring a deal to let Iran access its uranium reserves. A spokesman for Niger's junta, which seized power in July, denied any deal with Iran and accused the U.S. of trying to prevent it from choosing its own diplomatic partners. A spokesman for Iran's UN mission in New York declined to comment. Since last year's coup, Niger has tightened ties with Russia, as well as with neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso, both of which are ruled by generals aligned with Moscow. The world's second largest economy is hungry for foreigners. Before the pandemic, China's financial capitals were teeming with international visitors and expats, and students flocked to the country's universities to study Mandarin, with many staying behind to pursue lucrative careers. But as Journal reporter Lisa Lin reports, China's allure has faded, with the number of registered foreign citizens dropping sharply in recent years following COVID lockdowns and a government crackdown on businesses. And that has now led Beijing to roll out a charm offensive in a bid to shed its increasing isolation. Lisa, everyone likes to be liked, of course, but maybe the same goes for countries as well. But tell us about why the stakes here are about more than just China's image.
There's a lot more at stake here beyond just being liked. Firstly, China could really use the economic boost that overseas investment and tourism brings. Economic growth in China was sluggish last year, and the country is battling a real slump in consumer confidence. To just give you some perspective, foreign investment inflows last year fell 8%, and that's the first decline in 10 years. So Beijing really needs to address this slide. For example, when foreign expats and executives come to China, they bring skills and knowledge to the country that China needs to advance its business and manufacturing sectors. I think more broadly as well, the longer-term expats we've interviewed say a lack of foreign interest could possibly lead to a deepening of mistrust between China and the world, and now's really not the time for it.
All right, so lots of potential consequences there. And as you say, China has stepped in here with a so-called charm offensive to try and turn the situation around. What form is that taking?
Yeah, so people kind of call this period a post-COVID hangover. China had shut its borders for so long during the pandemic years that tourists just don't think about China anymore when they think about traveling somewhere. And within China itself, you had these really strict city lockdowns that because of COVID had paralyzed entire regions, and that's led to a huge outflow of expats and also manufacturing companies who were worried about their supply chains. China recognizes this exodus, and they've been taking steps to address it. I think the biggest one they've taken is really to waive off visa requirements for 15 countries over the past year. So, for example, if you were a resident of France or Germany, you don't need a visa to go into China anymore. And to make it more appealing for longer-term expats, China's also extended tax breaks. And for foreign companies looking to expand in China, Beijing has promised to break down market barriers and just do more to smooth out any challenges hindering them there.
I would imagine those assurances to businesses will take a little time to actually lead to any changes in business practices, Lisa. But I am curious if some of those steps you've talked about are starting to show any effect yet?
Yes, we're seeing some really early positive signs. So, for example, the number of tourists are up, and not just tourists, the business travelers too. This group was hit pretty hard during the pandemic, because if you remember, China made all incoming travelers quarantine for 2 weeks before entering the country, and that was hugely unpopular. The business travelers are coming also because China's hosting more international exhibitions. The other promising thing to note is that the US and China will increase direct flights between the two countries at the end of the month. So it's going from 35 flights each week to 50 direct flights each week. But beyond that, I think there are also signs that it will take a while for businesses to return.
Yeah, not to mention that no less than the U.S. State Department is actively discouraging foreign engagement with China. Beijing really facing some big headwinds here.
Yeah, so the overall geopolitical situation is really not helping. The State Department has put out a travel advisory on China, basically asking its citizens to reconsider travel to China because of the risk of exit bans or wrongful detention. And in Washington, D.C. itself, the topic of China engagement is now very, very toxic. A lot of U.S. businesses have come under scrutiny over their China ties. So while we were researching this story, we spoke to many people living in China or people who have left China as well. And I think there was one U.S. business executive in Beijing who really put it best. This person says China has a long way to go before it can restore the broken trust from over the last few years.
That was The Wall Street Journal's Lisa Lin. Lisa, thanks so much for bringing us this story.
Thanks for having me, Luke.
Coming up, federal prosecutors probe whether Meta's social media platforms are facilitating drug sales. And a key free speech case heads to the Supreme Court. Those stories and more after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Shares of both Nissan and Honda have risen sharply this morning after the Japanese automakers said they were teaming up on electric vehicles as part of an effort to compete with rivals in China and the U.S., such as BYD and Tesla. People at the companies said Nissan and Honda have faced pressure from Japanese officials to work more closely together to achieve economies of scale. The rally in both automakers comes amid broader gains in Japanese stocks ahead of a hotly anticipated rate decision from the Bank of Japan tomorrow, where analysts and investors expect the BOJ to raise rates. The historic move comes as Japan's economy kicks into higher gear following years of negative interest rates as the BOJ sought to combat economic stagnation and persistent deflation. Now to a journal exclusive, as we've learned that federal authorities are investigating Meta platforms for its role in drug sales. Salvador Rodriguez covers Meta for the journal.
In my own exploration of Facebook, it's not tough to find marijuana for sale on Facebook Marketplace, for example, or magic mushrooms. We've heard of situations where folks are selling ingredients to make drugs wholesale, or selling steroids, selling counterfeit pills. It seems to be a pretty wide problem.
U.S. prosecutors have reportedly sent subpoenas as part of a criminal grand jury probe looking into whether Facebook and Instagram are facilitating and profiting from the illegal sale of drugs.
A way that Meta could potentially profit, theoretically, is if someone places an ad, which Meta draws revenue from, to draw attention to their personal account or maybe their page. And then if they are using those pages or accounts to conduct those kinds of sales, that would be one situation where Meta is indirectly profiting.
Meta has said that the sale of illicit drugs is against its policies and that it's working to find and remove such content from its services while also assisting law enforcement authorities in helping combat the sale and distribution of such drugs. The prosecutor's office declined to comment. And to hear much more on this story, check out the latest episode of Tech News Briefing, wherever you get your podcasts. The Supreme Court today will hear a key case on free speech. Under scrutiny is the White House's strategy for fighting what it said was misinformation about vaccines, COVID lockdowns, and other public health efforts in a time of crisis. The lawsuit led by the Republican Attorneys General of Missouri and Louisiana alleges that the federal government engaged in censorship by unlawfully pressuring tech companies to suppress posts opposed to vaccines. It is the latest in a series of cases that could set important ground rules for digital free speech and content moderation. The Biden administration argues that the plaintiffs have exaggerated the government's influence, while Google, Meta, and X haven't taken sides in the litigation. And a new wave of tech is changing how some women view and even use their monthly cycles in their favor. Biohacking is the phenomenon where women monitor their menstrual cycles with a range of different wearables and apps to determine how hormones may affect their daily lives. And although women tracking their periods is nothing new, health and fitness freelance reporter Caitlin Carlson says the technology is booming.
So the word empowering came up quite a few times during my early interviews with the women who are doing this. And they're finding that instead of dreading how their cycle makes them feel, they can actually adjust their routines to work with the ups and downs, tweaking everything from their nutrition to their workouts, even their social schedules and how they run their businesses based on their cycles. For example, some women do lower intensity workouts when they're in their luteal phase. That's when some women may feel less energetic due to hormonal fluctuations. Another woman told me that she tries to schedule dates when she knows she'll be feeling more social based on where she is in her cycle. Another woman does something similar for work, aiming to pitch clients during ovulation in her follicular phase.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant and Hattie Moyer. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.